Hello there. This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. You're listening to Hospital Radio for Northumberland and North Tyneside. Daft as a Brush is a cancer patient care offering staffed vehicles to transport outpatients free of charge to and from hospital who are undergoing chemotherapy and radiotherapy treatment. In other words, it's a befriending scheme for those who are suffering from cancer. And this is all connected with Freeman and the RVI hospitals. And I'm delighted to have with me today Brian Burney, who set it all up. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
How did the name Daft as a Brush originate, Brian, and who thought of it? It sounds like a bit of a daft title.
Well, it goes back. I'm a war baby, born in First Avenue in Heaton. And after the war, we moved over the railway line into Brough Street. And I always remember in the 1950s, there was someone worked for Parsons, ironically, who my mum always chatted with, and he always had a smile on his face. And I always remember when my mum closed the front door in the downstairs flat that we lived, she used to say, he's as daft as a brush. And it was a very complimentary comment. So when we set the charity up in 2010, Transporting Cancer Patients, I thought it'd be rather nice to call it Daft Brush. It links my parents to what I'm doing now, years later. And also, it brings a smile to people's face when they're going through a very difficult and trying time.
So it's bringing your parents into the equation,
yes,
isn't
yes.
it? Brian, just to start off with, could you select one opening song, something that's your favourite, just to open this programme with before I ask you the questions?
It's a toss-up between Water of Tyne, But It's Mine. Water of Tyne, everyone knows, I think. And not so many people know Eric Boswell's But It's Mine. And But It's Mine, the song talks about Northumberland in great detail, and there's a line in that song which says, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but it's mine. And I guarantee when you play this, there won't be a dry eye in the house. It really is rather moving.
Right,
song.
Shall we start with Eric Boswell then?
Yeah, start with Eric.
Right, over to Eric Boswell with, and the title is again?
But It's Mine.
Now, I've not heard this one before, so I'll enjoy listening to this one.
Have you stood on the cliffs and looked out on the sea at the ships coming into the Tyne? It's not everyone's cup of tea, I suppose, but it's mine. Have you been on the fells with the wind in your face and the traffic and noise not a sign? It's not everyone's way of life, I suppose, but it's mine. Each man speaks, and each man speaks with a different voice. Happiness is something we can't define. Each man looks at life, and then he can make his choice. I chose these, yes, I chose these, and they're mine. Have you walked through the forests of Kilda and breathed in the scent of the spruce and the pine? It's not everyone's cup of tea, I suppose, but it's mine. Have you lain in the sun and stared up at the sky? Have you found it affects you like wine? It's not everyone's way of life, I suppose, but it's mine. Each man speaks, and each man speaks with a different voice. Happiness is something we can't define. Each man looks at life, and then he can make his choice. I chose these, yes, I chose these, and they're mine. Have you stood on the cliffs and looked out on the sea at the ships coming into the Tyne? It's not everyone's cup of tea, I suppose, but it's mine.
That was Ralph Hawkes singing But It's Mine by Eric Boswell. Now, Brian, can I just ask you, after that lovely song, what motivated you to set up such a scheme? What triggered all this off for you?
I've met some incredible people in my lifetime. Obviously, my mum and dad were the most favourite ones. But in later years, I met two lovely ladies. One, some of your listeners will probably remember, going back to the 1980s, and that was a lady called Daisy Clark, and what Daisy did in raising money to pay for a full-size body scanner. I think it was, in actual fact, over £1 million. And then later on, I met another lady called Joan Pringle from the Alnwick area. And Joan was a great supporter of people with cancer. And in some cases, she used to drive them from North Northumberland into the, in those days, the General Hospital. And I think it was those two ladies that put me on this course to providing this free service for cancer patients getting to and from hospital.
Nice.
Ironically, when you look at cancer treatment, it's the worst part about having cancer treatment is getting to and from hospital. And so it's a great boost, help for patients when they're going through a very difficult and trying time.
And this service is free of charge?
Totally free, yes. It's totally free. And we're able to do this because obviously all of our staff, 300 plus of them, are working as volunteers. So it's very cost effective, yes.
Yes. So how does someone with cancer get in touch with you?
If you're having cancer treatment at the Freeman RVI Hospital, if they can organise for the referral to come through to our offices, Dafters of Rush Cancer Patient Care, and we'll take over that from there. But the patients have to be referred to us by the hospital. We're not a taxi company. We're providing a service to the hospital.
Could I just ask what your couriers and drivers actually do? With the patient, it's to and from, but they do sit with the patient, don't they?
Yeah, yes. Each ambulance has a crew of two, a driver, which we like to call a chauffeur because they transport VIPs, very important patients. But I think the most important person in the vehicle is the companion, because it's amazing how many patients actually travel to hospital on their own. So they invariably are their family or friend while they're having this treatment. If it's radiotherapy treatment, we stay on site with them whilst they're having their treatment and take them straight home. That could be after an hour visit to hospital. If it's chemotherapy, that could be all day. So we get them admitted, we leave site, and then we call back later when the treatment's finished.
So who are these volunteers? What kind of people? Where do they come from? What ages are they?
All walks of life. When I say we've got a senior partner of a huge law firm in Newcastle, to an Egyptian doctor, to a housewife, to a white van driver, to a plumber, you name it, we've got them. And the main bond of all of them, they want to help people that have cancer, that are going through this very difficult time. Invariably, some of them have also been touched with cancer themselves.
Mm-hmm. Brian, do you mind me asking if faith in God has figured in your life at all? Because it seems to me that you have done what the rich young ruler in the gospel stories couldn't do. You sold everything, didn't you, and just gave it away. How did that feel? Tell me about your faith first.
As a child, being brought up in the east end of Newcastle, yes, I used to go to St Mark's Church. I was in the boys' brigade and etc., life boys. But as you grow up, you grow apart. But in growing apart, I don't think it was a faith in God. I had fantastic mum and dad. I came from a very humble background. And whatever they had, they shared and gave away. And I think it's your parents that's introduced me into doing this, more so than possibly religion. But I must admit that currently I must go to 30 to 40 different churches all over the northeast of England. So I probably go to more churches than practicing churchgoers do. But no, I think this was, I was introduced to doing this as a child, through the actions of my parents. And I look at the world and I see some kids have no chance because the parents are villains, where I was very fortunate in having a fantastic mum and dad, and you are what your parents are.
And he was a socialist, I believe, was he?
Well, my dad was a devout socialist, yes. He told me at a very early age that socialism was Christianity in practice, yes. Nice. Yes, my dad was a great giver.
And the churches have no doubt supported you in what you've been trying to do.
Amazing. It's amazing, the churches. I think I must have been to every brand of church going, and not just Christian churches. So yes, they've been very, very supportive of us. Because somebody knows somebody that's been affected by cancer.
Yes.
And it's they say one in every two people in this country will end up having cancer, and those that don't are obviously living next door to somebody that does have. So yes, it's
Cancer is widespread, isn't it? So how do you manage to finance a scheme like this if you don't charge the patients for the services given?
Well, some of the work that we do for the NHS, yes, we do invoice them for, and they very kindly pay our invoices. But the majority of our work is funded by voluntary donations. But it's a free service to the patients. We don't ask for any money off the patients. But obviously, if the patients want to make a donation after the treatment's finished, they're more than welcome to do so.
And a lot of people, a lot of groups all over the Northeast do raise money for your charity?
Unbelievable. It's very, very moving. And I think it's because we've never lost that personal touch. Everyone that makes a donation to us within 48 hours gets a thank you letter from me. So we're very, very close to those that give us. And it's, well, you can't wish to live in a fantastic place. And you can't wish to have a fantastic hospital as we do have in the Freeman RVI.
They're very blessed to have you. Someone my husband knows paid his wife to do a skydiving course to raise money for Daft as a Brush. Quite dangerous for her, and no doubt she thought of paying him to do a swim with the sharks course. I think I would have done. But also, my son is a firefighter, and I remember that he and his friends did a coast-to-coast walk for your charity too. So a lot of people are getting behind you.
Whether it's an elderly ladies group at a Methodist church or some Hells Angels motorbikers, it's amazing how many people help us. And it's the wonderful thing on my side is when you don't ask these people to do it, they come out of the woodwork and just say, we'd love to do this for you. But I think that's because we employ over 300 volunteers, and somebody somewhere will know one of our volunteers, or will see one of our ambulances parked up outside somebody's house. Yes.
Cancer has touched every home. I know it devastated my family in the 60s. Right, Brian, can I just ask, if you sold all and gave everything to set up this scheme, where are you living now?
I rent an apartment from the charity. I've got a two-bedroom apartment above the offices here. But in living in a lovely area of Gosser, I don't have a motor car, so I have a bus pass. I don't have a mobile phone or I can switch a computer on. But it's amazing, it allows you to do what you want to do. For 40 to 50 years, I was a servant to possessions. And when you don't have possessions, it releases a whole new aspect of your life.
And what you do in this life is important.
Oh, yes, very important. But what I found over the last 6 years, albeit the charity was set up in the 1980s, and I've worked here 8 days a week for the last 6 years, is what we're going to leave behind. And hopefully we will leave something truly remarkable. And I know it's going out on Sunday, this programme, and I know I never stopped then, but my total ambition before I start pushing up this is treatment and transport have to be integrated. If I can leave that behind for the next generation, when the medics are formulating the treatment plan, they should also be formulating how the patient's going to get to hospital, because that's the worst part of cancer treatment, is how you get to hospital on a daily basis.
What you've done is amazing, because as you were saying to me before this interview there, we bring nothing into this world,
yeah,
and we take nothing out of this world. So,
but what we leave behind is the most important. And when I look at my colleagues round about me, is the 300, it's what they're getting out of helping it. And yes, I may have lit the pilot light, etc., but the volunteers are the ones that do all the real work. I just talk about the real work, you see. It's wonderful. And it's amazing how much they get out of what they're doing, even though they give a phenomenal amount.
So you're surrounded by treasure, really. And that rich young ruler was told by Jesus, you know, leave all behind and you will have treasures in heaven. But you are surrounded by these treasures, aren't you?
Yeah. I interviewed a chap from Wall's End to join us, and he left this room here that we're having the interview. He looked me straight in the eyes and he said, I'm very impressed what you're saying about the team working as part of what all makes it happen. In the spelling of the word team, there's no letter I. And it is true, it's not I, it is a team. I told that little story to some cubs in North Fell where I was giving them a talk to. And this little cub, I could have bloody strangled him. And he put his hand up and he said to me, Mr. Burney, says, not Mr. Burney, it's Brian. He says, all right then, Brian. He says, Brian, do you know, in the spelling of the word idiot, there are two letter I's.
It's not just adults that you provide a service for, is it, Brian? This scheme is on offer for children too. Is this correct? And how do you ensure that they travel safely?
This year, 2017, will probably be involved in some 20,000 cancer patient journeys. Most of those are adults. But a year last autumn, we started transporting children from the Great North Children's Hospital. And I wanted to do that because everyone's seen these children with cancer and how emotive it is. What I didn't realise, being an outsider, is that most children can cope with the cancer. The people that can't cope with the children's cancer are the adults. Mm-hmm. So the service that we provide, taking patients to and from the hospital, is more for the adults, but the problem that they have getting to and from hospital. And with regard to the children's service, we're bringing patients from the northwest, the other side of Manchester, into Yorkshire, into Scotland. Because here in the centre of Newcastle, we have an absolutely fantastic hospital, the Great North Children's Hospital, which treats children. And of course, most children have leukemia, and it means that it's a very, very long process of curing these children, from originally being an inpatient to then being an outpatient. And of course, mums and dads have a juggling act between their children in hospital and obviously the rest of their family. So the service that we provide is very, very beneficial to them. But in addition to that, each of our ambulances are adopted by primary schools. So we have an excess of 20 schools all over the region have adopted ambulances. Not sponsored, adopted. And that means the children of the primary schools can identify with what we're doing. Most children know about cancer from the negative side, not from the positive side. And of course, if they can identify with their ambulance helping people getting to and from hospital, it's a great boost.
Did I hear that they named the ambulances as well?
Yes, they have all fancy names. Biker Primary School have called theirs Biker Bluebell. And for those that know the east end of Newcastle, you'll have seen those fields of bluebells going down to the river. St Peter's Roman Catholic School in Dryden Road, they've called theirs Puffin Express. Sorry, Baltic Express. Puffin Express is the school up at Sea Houses. Yes, so the schools from all over the region. But there are two ambulances that have been adopted by the Great North Children's Hospital, and they've called their ambulances Happy Ho Ho and Happy Asaurus. And the third one that we're hopefully purchasing from will be another Happy, but that one hasn't yet been named.
There's so much creativity in children, really. Can I just go on to the next question and say, looking back on all your years with Daft as a Brush, is there anything you would have done differently?
Yes, I would have started it sooner.
Good answer.
And I would have battled with the NHS to integrate treatment and transport sooner. It will happen, but if I can crack this treatment and transport, the 20,000 patient journeys we're doing currently, I could more than double that if the treatment and transport were integrated. So if there's anybody from the NHS listening to this programme, please, please, let's get together and work this problem out.
Right. You have a fleet now, I believe, of 22 ambulances and about 300 volunteers.
Yes.
Can it get any bigger? You know, where are you going in the future?
We're going to pause momentarily whilst we're integrating treatment and transport. But yes, I would love to think we could take that up to 25 to 30 ambulances. Because although we're doing these tens of thousands of patient journeys, we haven't even scratched the surface. If I told you that radiotherapy department at Freeman do 250 treatments per day, on a busy day, that can be in excess of 300. So you can see the demand for cancer patient transfer just in Freeman RVI alone, irrespective of all the district hospitals that as yet we haven't touched. But hopefully we'll start doing that next year.
It sounds like we have quite a unique scheme in the Northeast. Are you aware of a national... is there anything happening nationally to do with patient transport?
Well, people are doing this all over Great Britain on an ad hoc basis, but I don't think there's anyone that's specifically designated to only transporting Daft as a Brush cancer patient care. But I would estimate there must be 10 million journeys required in Great Britain. So the few thousand that we're doing, we haven't even scratched the surface. Hopefully in my lifetime, or if not, it became national. Because whatever you think about Tyneside, there's a need for this service in the Thames Valley, on Clydeside, etc.
Yes.
So it's and I think most of your listeners will know the problems of being working with patients that have to get to hospital on a daily basis.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for all the work that you have been doing. I don't know if anyone ever thanks you, but you certainly do put the Northeast on the map as well, and you're doing some fantastic work. Thank you very much. Would you like to suggest the other piece of music that you wanted, The Water of Tyne? Why that? piece of music.
Well, it's a love song, actually, and it's quite a moving song, Water of Time. And for those that listen to it, obviously, I think it'll bring another tear.
Thank you so much for this interview today. I've really enjoyed myself and I've learned a lot too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for coming.
Sadly, we don't have a copy of the 860 children that Brian mentioned who sang Water of Tyne, but we have here the next best thing, a copy of Bob Fox singing Water of Tyne followed by the Big River.
I cannot get to my love if I would dee, for the water of Tyne runs between her and me. And here I must stand with a tear in my eye, both sighing and sickly, me true love to see. Oh, where is the boatman, my bonny hinny? Oh, where is the boatman? Please bring him to me to ferry me over the Tyne to my hinny, and I will remember the boatman and thee. Oh, bring me a boatman, I'll pay any money, and you for your trouble rewarded shall be. If you'll ferry me over the Tyne to my hinny, or scull her across that rough river to me. Walking on cobbled stones, little bits of skin and bone, jumping on a tram car for a ride. I can remember then, 'cause I was just a boy of 10, hanging around the old quayside. Now all the capstans and the cargo boats and stevedores are gone to where the old ships go, but memories like the seas live on. 'Cause that was when coal was king, the river was a living thing. I was just a boy, but it was mine, the coaly Tyne. This was a big river, I want you all to know that we were proud. This was a big river, but that was long ago. That's not now, that's not now. Father was a working man, he earned his living with his hands, had to cross the river every day. He picked up his union card out of the Neptune yard, mouths to feed and bills to pay. Then came a time for him to sail across the seas and far away. Finally, when that war was won, you brought him home, and home he stayed until his days were done under a golden sun. Then you took him to where he longed to be, back to the sea. This was a big river, I want you all to know that we were proud. This was a big river, but that was long ago, and that's not now, that's not now. June was the last to go, heard it on the radio. Then they played the latest number one. So what do they do all day? And what are they supposed to say? What does a father tell his son? Now if you believe that there's a bond between our future and our past, try to hold on to what we have. We built them strong, we built them to last. For this is a mighty town, it's built upon solid ground. And everything that tries so hard to kill, we will rebuild. But this was a big river, I want you all to know we're very proud.
New Year is a time for new beginnings, a chance to take stock of our lives and start all over, even by making New Year's resolutions. I wonder, after listening to this remarkable man, Brian Burney, whether he's got us thinking about what we'd like to do with the rest of our lives. Might there be something inspirational that we too could do for others? We've heard someone today fulfilling his dream, seeing it through, and someone who is still making further plans. As Brian just told us now, he only wishes that he'd begun all this sooner. Our final song is therefore quite an appropriate one. A song for us all as the year 2017 begins. It's never too late to make a brand new start. Bye for now.
It's never too late to make a brand new start. It's never too late to unlock a stony heart. For in this world where life is short and time just rushes by, it's never too late to give God's love a try. It's never too late to learn to love your fellow man. It's never too late to try and build your life again. 'Cause the circle of this life on earth won't keep on passing by. It's never too late to give God's love a try. It's never too late. Too late to take.